Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is Post covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening, and Edwin is back for another rant. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. But show me the data. Is data data, or is it or is it something you want to hear? You're the expert at data, so show me the data, Martin. Show me the data.
Well, I think there's a big difference between data, numbers, and intelligence, right? Because you can actually make data or numbers do almost anything you want, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it actually gives you any insight or intelligence. And at the moment, I think there's a lot of rubbish being spoken about a lot of the data that's around. So let's be clear, just because you've got data doesn't necessarily mean you've got numbers, doesn't necessarily mean you've got insight or intelligence.
Well, that's right. Look, I've been having a bit of a discussion, an open discussion, and with some of the Twitterati, something that I don't do of late. Just got too busy to get caught up with some of the nonsense. But there was a post, and somebody put up there tagging me on it and said, why would they need someone in real estate to advise? Data is data. I mean, look, there's manipulated data, as you say. There's false data, selective data. And there's even the wrong data for the wrong industry, right? And then we've also got speculative data or wishful thinking data, like our friend Mark Boris, right? In 3 to 4 months, we're going to see this avalanche of mortgagee in possessions. I mean, for somebody in finance, somebody's got to go knocking on his door. I'm happy to knock on his head in the octagon if he wants to have a go, because I know he's a boxer and he's been training in the octagon. So happy to take it on. Maybe you can knock some sense in.
Yeah, it was very interesting because one of the comments following that article, which was in news.com, was from somebody who said, well, hang on a moment. He's in the lending industry. He's been giving mortgages to people, and he's now suggesting that people won't be able to pay their mortgages. So how does that work?
Spot on. How does that work? Look, I just really like the introduction, right? According to news.com.au, the article starts, Mark Boris warns families will be forced to sell their homes within months as mortgage cliff erupts. We know that there's a lot of mortgage stress. I mean, that's just a given. We've been talking about it for a while, and we've walked right into it now, and it's only going to get worse for some families. And then it goes, Australia is facing a devastating financial disaster. And money guru Mark Boris has warned things will get nightmarish within months. Now, you sort of think third party writing about Mark, right? And then, so when I got tagged on this post, I simply tweeted back, who's the author? Oh, it's Mark Boris.
The guru.
Mark Boris, the guru. Look, he's a very smart man. I've got no... there's no two ways about it. Very smart man, very entrepreneurial, and he's done great as a business person. But he gets to a point, Martin, with a lot of these people. If you want to push the wheelbarrow, and I'm sure that he's pushing the wheelbarrow for the mortgage houses that I can't recall whether they're still franchised or not, the offices, or whether it comes under one umbrella. But obviously, you got to push. You've got to push a wheelbarrow to keep those offices, to keep the doors open, right? Likewise with our friend Tom. I mean, Tom's a very smart bloke. He's very good in his craft, at his craft, and he's been in the industry for a very long time. But he's got to push his barrow as well. And look, and let's make no two qualms about it. I've got to push my barrow as well, right? I've got to put food on the table. But we try to do it in a way that's more informative, and I would hope that that's what comes across, that we're more informative and more of an educational, and taking a broader view, and taking all the what ifs, But let's not pull data, out of thin air and create it and manipulate it to what we want it to be, what we wanted to say. More to the point, I guess, with the argument or the discussion that I was having since yesterday and this morning with some of the Twitterati, is around the premise that it's okay. Look, I'm all for new starts, upstarts, and for people trying to bring information and having another angle of information to equip buyers, sellers, tenants, and landlords, in the property arena to equip them to be better buyers, better sellers, better landlords, better property managers, better real estate agents. But not when you try to manipulate that data and look at some view, and this is just my personal view, some nonsensical segment of the data and come to the conclusion that the market is going backwards. I've even been tagged on another post to say that the reason why I say what I say, I've engaged that discussion in the way that I've engaged that discussion or that debate, I call it a conversation, is because they think that I'm highly leveraged, and that's a position I take. It's not about being highly leveraged. It's not about how much money I owe the bank, or as a matter of fact, I don't owe any bank any money. Straight to the point. Personally, I don't. The only relationship I have with any banking institution is through my business accounts. So, that to the point, it just gets a surface, or it brings about people that I can hear in a lot of emotion in their posts, and a lot of frustration and anger. And my big thing about it, all this is I take all this on board. I can be cynical, I can be cheeky, but at the end of the day, Martin, I feel for these people. I feel for the people, the young people that are angry out there, and they may see my posts or may read my posts, thinking that I want the market to continue to rise, or may read my post thinking that I want the market to crash, that I've got some sort of a hidden agenda other than educate the general populace as to, to be more aware of different things. Your opinion is your opinion. My views are my views, and I will share deeper and stronger views and more granular views on certain property with clients based on the job that I am contracted to do. But one of the things that I'm hearing more and seeing more, reading more on Twitter and on the social media posts is the anger and frustration. And who's to blame for all this anger and frustration? Is the false promises, the false prophets that have been leading this nation into a further decay, economic decay, and making the Australian dream a nightmare for many. And for some, they won't even be able to lay their heads on a proper bed and pillow, because they'll be sleeping in cars and caravans and tents to be able to dream about anything or a good future for Australia. And they're the politicians, and that's where we should point or channel our anger to. Look, data is data. You make it what you will. That's my two bobs with regard to the wheelbarrow that I'm pushing. Take it as you will.
Yeah, and the point there, Edwin, is that the data is just a foundation, right? So whatever the information is, you've got to ask some questions about how the information is actually captured. Is it robust and statistically appropriate? But then you've still got to overlay an interpretation on top of it to try and draw some consequences from it as to what may or may not be happening. And I guess my point is that people don't come to the data interpretation without a particular set of perspectives and philosophies that they've actually got based on their experience and based on what they're wanting to present. And if you then say, well, actually, and of course, who is the agency of that data, so what what specific information do they want to present, I find it's quite interesting that there was some complaints now from one of the portals about whether they're actually presenting data accurately and appropriately. And you know, you and I have both said that in some cases the property portals have an axe to grind and are presenting information which is just not appropriate based on the data that's there. So there's a question of why are they interpreting it the way they are. And I'll give you another example. There's a big property portal in the UK called Rightmove, and they've just put out some data that says total property listings are down, the average sale duration is taking a lot longer. There are still people looking, but they're not able to actually reach us into the market because the borrowing power has dropped, and prospective vendors don't want to drop their prices, but are having to if they want to sell. Now, that at a high level is a reasonable summary of both the Australian market and the UK market. But then you've got to understand that, you know, in different locations with different types of property, with different types of buyers, there's a bunch of different stories going on. And so trying to sort of extrapolate the whole of the market from one data point is the problem. Or as the Hitchhiker's Galaxy said, you extrapolate the whole galaxy or the whole universe from a fairy cake. You know, you can't do that. And so the point is, this is not a simple process of saying, well, if the data says X, then the answer is X. No, there's an interpretive level. There's an agenda level that's making people behave in a particular way, put information out in a particular way. And, you know, as we say quite often, everybody's got an axe to grind.
Definitely, everybody's got an axe to grind. Everybody's got something to sell you, right?
Exactly. I've got a bridge to sell you, Edwin, if you're interested.
That's the other half a bridge, yes. Yeah, look, in that, I guess you've also got to, we also now got to, I'm sure you're looking at your data points, your data sets, the ones that you present, a lot differently than now than what you would have been looking at it in analyzing a pre-pandemic, because a lot of things changed as far as the real estate industry is concerned, and the movements and the shifts and the changes. I mean, from the point of the people that have taken carriage of sales and property management portfolios, the industry itself, to how the markets reacted to different things that the government have thrown at us, and now with immigration and everything else. So yeah, we sort of, yeah, like you said, we really have to look at those data points and look at them deeper, broader, and what information do we want to gain out of it? Is it the right information? Is it the right data point for that, for the purpose of that analogy you're trying to bring? Is it real? Is it realistic? Is it relevant to that? I mean, there's so much more, right? So in that, you know, and on our WeChat chatter segment, I thought I'd bring in in relation with data and how people are looking still. Some people are still looking at historical events and trying to judge or make commentary on what's happening currently, is my understanding, based on historical economic and global events. But the way I look at it, Martin, I'm obviously we're here to have a conversation, and you're more than happy to be corrected. But the point that in the WeChat chatter commentary that for today is what that I want to bring to people's attention is what Dr. Cameron Murray put up on his Twitter post, and comparing what happened to Japan. The economy in Japan in the 90s, and I guess the point that he's trying to emphasize there or to there is when the Japanese, we were talking in the 90s that the Japanese were didn't invade Australia, but they were going to buy Queensland, and then soon after, when they had an economic downturn, they sold what they bought for, the majority of the properties that they bought for in Queensland, they sold for 50%, 45%. I bought, myself and my family, we bought two townhouses that belonged to Japanese investors at the time, and we bought them for 45% less than what was originally purchased, and another one for 52% less than what it was originally purchased. And there were other friends that bought others as well. So, but to equate that to what's happening now with the Evergrandes of China, and as Dusty says, and there'll be even more ever so grands, you know, with issues in China, with the economy that's going on, to try and correlate that with the historical views of Japan, what happened there, and I guess allude, my takeaway from that was allude that it could affect our market, and there would be a major property downturn. I think it failed again. It's, you know, there's failure from the individual to understand the political the political differences for one, and the economic and the political differences there in China, how they're so intertwined, given the fact that there's only one party that runs that country and a small group of elites, and the general public don't have a choice like the Japanese had, and nor do, you know, and the Western mind fails to comprehend that, whereas the Chinese people don't have those choices that the Western that Westerners have, that we have, in terms of you know, changing asset classes, quickly selling out and doing this and that with our money. And also, I guess there's a failure, in my view, in that understanding that most of the people are looking at running every which way they can from China, as opposed to what happened with the Japanese back in the 90s, when they were basically sold out and took the money back home.
Well, that's right. And so it's always a danger, isn't it, reading historically what happened with where we are now. You know, there's a bunch of differences this time around. You know, the Bank of China yesterday dropped their one-year rate slightly by 10 basis points to try and do a bit of stimulus, but didn't touch the five-year rate, which suggests that some people were expecting more significant cuts in rates. And, you know, the situation in China is complex and difficult and different. And I think that's the point to underscore. And in fact, I saw that you did a post in response, which basically said, you know, you can't just make a read across from Japan to China and say, because it happened in Japan, it's going to happen in China.
Well, that's right. And this is where I spell it all out. I mean, this is after picking Dusty's brains, right? Because she's the expert in China. Yeah, look, and it's up there for our viewers to read. But yeah, at the end of the day, right now, what we see happening, what our chatterers are telling us locally, and what we are seeing, look, we have constant conversations with Chinese, local Chinese real estate industries and real estate houses and marketing houses here, and a lot of it, yes, comes from the WeChat chatter, the local WeChat chatterers that Dusty and Evan monitor, you know, across Sydney, across Australia, to an extent as well, the five or six groups, investment groups that they're involved with, and also the ones from abroad. So that's where we get a lot of this information from, right? But to think and correlate the same thing that happened with Japan as to China, and not understanding the pain. I mean, the Chinese media, the Chinese government stopped posting the youth unemployment rate because it's getting so high. I mean, this is the stuff that's happening there. We know that there's another, you know, 10, 12 million university graduates about to hit the workforce, but with no prospects in check. The only thing that's successful at the moment in China, what we call, or what Dusty and Evans call, your snakehead organizations, which mainly illegal organizations that are involved with organ harvesting and sending people abroad on false pretenses of a job, and then they end up becoming slave. I mean, crime is right. So that's the future for the youth. And if that's a future for the youth, obviously the parents and the grandparents that are very wealthy and they're super wealthy, mega wealthy, a lot of them have already took the money out of China months ago, if not years ago, and they've been they're sitting around other Asian nations, you know, including Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, and other parts of the world where they've parked the money. They've parked a lot of money in Canada and in America. But now we are, Australia is looking very, very attractive for many reasons. So this is, things changed, February 2020, from looking at, not only the economy, in my view, but more to the point in looking at, the landscape of the property industry changed, and things continue to change, like the Chinese government policies change on a dime. So are our illustrious leaders also changing their property policies on a dime as well? Whichever way the brown paper bag leads them, that's where they'll go.
Absolutely. And, the housing announceables from last week, well, as we discussed, were relatively, non-significant and won't really have much impact on what's going on. They didn't manage to build their planned number of houses last time around, so they kicked the score down the road, increased it slightly. And attempt to try and control rents and freeze rents wasn't successful, so the Greens are now sitting out on the side a little bit, all of those things. But for me, Edwin, one of the really interesting Twitters that you made, or should I say X, I don't know what the equivalent of a tweet is on X, isn't it an excitement? I don't know what you call it, but you made a really interesting comment, which started off, if I was to tell you, right? If I was to tell you, and I think this is a really, really important tweet because it really underscores some of the dynamics that people are not seeing but should be seeing.
Yeah, well, that's true. And this is something, I mean, look, and this is up to about a year and a half ago, that was the last time I checked. Whether they're still here or not is another story. But one thing I do know of some of the family members that I hear whether siblings are still here, I don't know at this point, but others, yes. But not only that, but there's in the last month, we've come in contact with mega wealthy developers that are land banking and have been land banking for over 25 years here in Sydney, and they're just waiting. They're just waiting for that second wave. I mean, you can go on reading the post as to what I talk about there in regards to, to mainland China, people wanting to get out and where the people are coming from, and how we've discussed in the past how they'll buy a home regardless of what the rental income is. Their main purpose of buying is land banking and for future, for future development and ongoing development, because they've got the inside running on a lot of future events because of, for whatever reason, however closely they glide or they slide or they dine and wine with our local politicians. But look, at the end of the day, Martin, one of the things that I've spoken about before is one of the things that a lot of our commentators, a lot of our commentary, property reporters and the like, and the Twitterati and everyone else, even I myself sometimes forget, the fact that we're not a very big market in comparison. I mean, for crying out loud, we've only got we've only got something like 7,100 homes for sale in all of Sydney currently under domain. I mean, that's one market in the suburb in one of the main first tier cities in China. Or if you want to compare us to the Canadian market, I mean, we feed all of Australia in Vancouver or Toronto. So I mean, we're not a big market. So anything that where you've got we make a big song and dance, or the media make a big song and dance out of seeing 1,000 more listings come on market because of the natural shift from winter to the uptick in property listings from winter to spring, and you've got full page articles in the Sydney Morning Herald, AFR, news.com, Domain, REA, you name it, it's out there. But at the end of the day, it's really an uptick just under 1,000 new properties according to the domain numbers that we track on a week by week basis. That's bugger all in comparison to the 715,000 migrants that are coming in. And it's only now that I read an article or just glanced through an article that 3/4 of the new property that's going to be built over the next next couple of years will be absorbed by international students. Yeah, how's that for a poke in the eye? so this is the whole thing. I think we've got to look at we've got to look at all this data holistically and see. But again, we go back to that: what's happening in your LGA? What's happening in your suburb? What's happening in your neighborhood? What's happening in your block? What's happening in your street? The two main things happen in the Blacktown LGA of late that we can bring to the our viewers' attention. One is that they'll probably know that there's hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be spent in the Blacktown Civic Centre. There's going to be a new shopping centre. That's going to be a joint venture development with the same people that developed the Parramatta Civic area, and it's a huge. It's a win for the. For the constituents of Blacktown, it's enormous. Good on them, right? So you can you start giving out your party hats and your balloons and fireworks and celebrate, because property prices have just gone just starting to skyrocket around the CBD of Blacktown. But on the other side of that coin is the fact that they've regazetted the majority of Blacktown is flood zone. So insurances have gone in some parts of Blacktown from $1,800 a year to $7,000 a year. So, I mean, and this is where you've got to look at things granular.
Yeah, granularity is the key, as we've said so many times, Edwin. It's just very, very important. And, avoid the high-level headlines and the property prices are doing this or that or the other. The fact is that things are very different, as you say. Local circumstances do impact, very, very, very important to really drill down. And even when you drill down, Edwin, and this is taking us on to the next bit of the conversation, right? when you start talking to agents, agents do give you some quite different stories, and you've actually been involved this past week in a particular episode, which I find absolutely fascinating.
Look, this is one of the things that I said, stuff it. I'm just gonna put it out there. So as part of our work as property consultants, is we do work for law firms as the agent that would basically manage the sale of a property when there's a dispute, and also we act as consultants for people that are either elderly or have an ailment and can't attend, and they really can't. It's hard for them to manage all that emotion around the sale of a property. So we our family call us in to assist them with that. So we manage the process for them, and also with young families that people that have just are pressed for time because of the young professionals that are pressed for time, and again, they also feel they'll get better served with a consultancy. So in that, so I said, bugger it, I'm going to just start putting it out there now and tell the agents as I interview for you know, in different parts of Sydney for properties that that we're involved in a system to go to market, and just ask them the questions and put out there as to, you know, from the horse's mouth, as they say, in this case from the donkey's mouth, what really goes on out there. And this is it. So this particular home, I won't disclose the area of the suburb, but it's at a price point where the desired outcome is 1.55. That's a desired outcome. The agents pretty much know that's the desired outcomes that were told, they were informed. They came in with the CMAs, and in this post that I put earlier on, it spells out the bit of a background on the desired outcomes, and these are the most all came in within that a CMA, which is a comparative market analysis of the property being valued between 1,470,000, call it, and 1,600,000, right? So this is the comparative market analysis. So this is the agent's opinion of the value of the property in today's market. That's a CMA that you give to a vendor in order to bid for the customer, right? So then they all know that the desired outcome is around about the 1.55. But when I ask them the question, what would the guides be when the property is listed on market? I mean, you and I talk about it, you and I discuss it, and this is something that's going to blow the little short snip that you'll share with our viewers. It's just going to blow their mind because it now puts a lot of credence on what we've been saying. Okay, I guess what would you be guiding the property at?
Running an auction.
Whether it's an auction or private treaty, what would the guide be, so to reflect on the market so we can achieve the...
With auction for this property, we will guide it at 1.3 back end. So
one comes in at 1.3 to 1.35, 1.4, 1.4 to 1.45, one came in with no guide, and one's in 147 to 1.55, right? But this is, they're no longer hiding it anymore, Martin. And knowing the fact that, and they know the fact that I am have been involved in the industry for 27 years or so, they just come out straight out and put it out there. They got no shame. I mean, it's underquoting in your face, because you are basically, they're basically wanting to go and guide the property below the CMA, below the comparative market analysis. But this is happening all the time. And why is it happening? Because that is how they get trained to do it, Martin. That is really poking the eye to the regulators, really, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And we should say, Edwin, that you had permission to make this recording, right? So there's nothing untoward here. But it does once again highlight this very significant issue of underquoting, where effectively people pitch one set of numbers, but then actually offer the property a different set of numbers. And then, of course, what they try to do is to wrangle the difference between the two when the offers come in below what the market appraisal probably was. And then, of course, the agents will say, well, you know, the market's changed, or this is only the best I could do. And then, you know, so then they try and apply a bit of pressure to try and get a deal at a price which is lower than what they actually told the vendor in the first place, which was the price that they could get to get the business in the first place. Now, this is, you know, in nature, you know, raw in tooth and claw, as they say, you can see precisely how the sausage is being made.
Yeah, if you want to call it a sausage, yeah, it's crazy, man. But the thing is, the look, Many would say that this is, let's look at it without the regs, right? Without the overarching regulations and legislation, right? Let's put that to the side, if we may, and let's look at it. And some would say that this is a great marketing strategy to achieve a higher price for anybody selling whatever, whether it's a house, whether it's a car, whether it's a tractor, whatever, because their philosophy or their way of thinking would be one to say that you'll have more people in the auction room or on the day of the auction. You'll have more people attending the open house for inspection, whatever, right? You'll have more people, and therefore more people creates a sense of urgency, and people end up paying more than what they're really prepared to pay, because of that urgency then is translated into more on the side of emotion rather than logic. That's their argument, right? Well, you could say maybe you give it a little bit of credence, but who's the ultimate winner? And this is in a good market, in a strong market, in a strong, and let's go back to property, in a strong property market. You could say, well, again, without putting the overarching regulations and legislation to the side, you could say, well, yeah, okay, that may be a win for the vendor. But let's look at the starting point. Let's look at the baseline. The baseline, if you want to achieve 1.6 million, you're starting at a baseline of 1.3. Yes, you've got 50-60% more people wanting to participate in the purchase sale, whether it be by auction or private treaty, on the day, but at the end of it, when people start offering above the 1.4 or 1.45, those below are already out. They're out. So they were never really in the race. The real buyers were the ones closer to the mark, the smarter buyers, the less emotional, the ones that have been in the market for a while, and they understand prices. They've seen the trends change. They've also confronted or have had dealings with certain agencies, certain officers, certain individuals, and they've attended perhaps 20, 30, 40, 50 auctions themselves, and they see the outcomes. They see the guided the guides are 1.2 and property selling for 1.4, guides of 1.6, property selling for 2.2, with the same individuals over and over again in the locale that they're looking for themselves, right? So in my view, at the end of the day, I feel that if you're going to start, and let's go back to an auction as well, if you're going to start an auction with a low ball guide and a low ball bid, because somebody's going to low ball it. If I start the auction, I'll definitely low ball it as one of my strategies. But I feel that the auctionee and the agents taking carriage of the sale of this property have got a bigger hill to climb, right? So it's going to take a lot longer to get there. So you're going to lose that little bit of momentum, and that little bit of momentum at the end of the day could translate into $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. It may not mean a lot if there's a sale of 1.6, 1.65 to an individual that's already overly elated anyway. But or to the agents mainly, it doesn't mean a great deal more to put a bit more effort to get there, because when you look at the commission of 1.5, 1.7, 2% even, it doesn't translate into a lot of money, right? So I feel that in that sense, the biggest winner really is the agent. Yes, the owners may have made a bit of extra money, But that's in a strong market. That is when the sentiment hasn't changed to looking at a future downward trend, or in a soft market. If you know that there's going to be a lot more properties come on the market because of the mortgage cliff, because of this, because of that, because of many other things that the mainstream media are putting out there. So obviously more properties on the market means more competition. So when you start lowballing it, again, the winners are still the real estate agents, but the vendors are no longer sitting on the winning podium with the real estate agents, because the agents have lowered the expectation of the property, lowered the value of the property, and also lowered the expectations of the street, the neighborhood, and the suburb to a greater extent, right? So at the end of the day, whether the market is going north, upwards, or whether the market is going south, softening market, the losers are the vendors, and the winners will always be the agents. Now, I've got in one of my old hard drives. I'll try and dig out sometime in the near future. I've got teachings from auctioneers and industry trainers, how they say that the primary job, there are two main jobs that a successful real estate agent, selling real estate agent have. These are training of big franchise offices, right? The first one, Martin, is obviously how to win the listing. The way they put it in a very illustrious way, but down to street talk, how to bullshit their way in the listing. In other words, price it high, buy the listing, do whatever it takes to get the list. That's the first and foremost job of a successful selling real estate agent, right? I don't subscribe to these philosophies, by the way, or these teachings. That's the first thing. The second most important job, Martin, is that once you've got the signature on the agency agreement, you've got 2 weeks to condition the owner to accept a lower price. In other words, as they say, meet the market. And you know, and this is how they condition the owners for the day of auction or the day of sale campaign, whether it's private trade or whatever it is, to accept a lower offer. They're the two main principal jobs. Everything else is whatever sort of thing. They don't even rank whatever else you do. That doesn't necessarily rank in their training programs as being tools and means or ways to help your vendor achieve the better outcome. I mean, how do you like them apples?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? So you've got to understand that the agenda of the real estate agent is a different agenda from the one that many people think, right? Because it's basically preserving their own business and developing their own business at whatever cost to the vendors and to prospective purchasers. So there is a three-way thing going on, not a two-way thing going on, right? So the agent is not, you know, a transparent pane of glass to get the vendor and the purchaser to meet, right? Actually, there's a whole strong agenda that the agent has, which is about their own interests and their own ends. And that means that the whole of the structure of the deal is very different from the way that most people would assume that it actually works.
Definitely. And this is where we're walking into for those that are looking at selling putting the properties on the market, putting the property on the market, if you're watching, we're walking into very dangerous ground at the moment. Not that the data set is there, not that the numbers are there, just yet, but it's a general sentiment, and if you start seeing a swell of of more properties on market in the local neighborhoods, it means more competition. So if you're going to start going out to market with a desire, with a desired outcome of 2 million, and your selling agent wants to lowball it at 1.6 to get more bodies and more interested parties through the front door, well, you've just shot yourself in the foot. You've just literally shot yourself in the foot, and you're a lame duck, as they say. Because it's the nature of the sentiment, and this is where a lot of people need to be very, very careful how they go to market. As I was saying to one of our followers today, sharing average, and I was saying to him that the conversations that need to happen between vendors that still got that very high expectation on the sale of the property, because everybody's been blowing wind up their ass, and the sky's the limit. Let's say you've got an expectation to achieve 2 million, but you, as a sincere selling agent, you feel that their property, the way it's presenting, the way it's the age of the property, the location, everything else, your comparative market analysis, runs at about, let's say, 1,850,000. It's an opportunity. Your competition may go in there with CMAs of 2 million, 2.1, just to get the listing. But I think when you get into those situations, the smarter agents would be saying to the vendors, we'll be sitting down with them, potential clients would be sitting down with them and say, look, yes, this may be your expectation. This is my comparative market analysis based on all the properties that I've seen in the area, based on looking at yours closely after inspecting your property, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But look, although it's my analysis, what we need to discuss now, it, more to the point, would be how I can be made the fool in getting closer to a sale of closer to the two. But the only way that we're going to do that is if collectively we work out what we can do to the property in presenting the property to market. In other words, what objections can we eliminate to maximize the sale of the property? Not bloody lowballing it, more to the point, more to the point. What do we do to the property to present it? Does it need some, simple cosmetic work? Does it need, when I say, a coat of paint, simple stuff, the marketing campaign, the strategy, appealing to who are we appealing to, all that. That would be a better conversation than going in there and saying, yeah, mate, I'll get you 2.1. And then at the end of the day, you're the bigger fool, because you end up on the market a lot longer than the auction campaign. And at the time that you should have gone out at 185 or 185 to 19, let's say, you had a better opportunity of achieving close to that, because there was only five or six properties on the market. But now all of a sudden you've got 12, because all the spring sales have popped up. I mean, that's, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just a novice one. I'm not just
Well, it is interesting, Edwin. I mean, I sold my property at Thurles, as you know, and what was fascinating there, I got a few agents to come through and give me their quote professional advice, and quite a few of them were lowballing it and doing all sorts of things. But one agent stood out, because that agent said, "Look, this is what I think you might be able to achieve. This is what I think is more likely, but here are the four or five things that you should do to make your property as marketable as possible." And so there were a few things that we did, and that included a coat of paint and a few other bits and pieces, and tidying up just one or two little things, not big problems, but little things that just made the property more presentable. And the other interesting thing that this particular agent said to me, "This property is a little bit unique and unusual. We won't go to auction because you're not going to actually attract enough people. What we're going to do is we're going to actually show it on a more exclusive basis, right? And so he was the only one that had a strategy that I felt was realistic, because all the others said, well, we'll bang it through as an auction and, you know, we'll just crank the handle. And that you could see the difference. It was chalk and cheese. But I reckon, and I spoke, I think, about five agents, I think. So, you know, 20% on my sample, right, actually was I felt working for me. The others I felt were working for them.
Look, that's the nature of this beast. But this is where it's all going to start unraveling for the industry, because of the low volume of sales. We may see, and we are seeing numbers rise in different areas now. We are seeing that the spring listing starting to jump on a week or two earlier. We're still lower than the 2022 numbers. But there's still hope. We're only growing at an average of about 300 new listings, 300 extra new listings on a weekly basis. Last year in spring, we were growing at closer to 500 new listings. But we've been slow. I'm hoping, and I've got my fingers crossed, that that for all those that want to buy, we will see a lot more properties on market over spring. And like, as I said, and we've got to see a hell of a lot more, because so far the numbers to me are still pointing in many parts of Sydney. We're walking into we've got this Mexican standoff where people just will not budge either way. There's two, you know, the expectations are high, there's a lot of things that are unraveling, and this is where people have just got to be, you know, very careful. I mean, you are obviously got to be very careful when you're buying. You've obviously got to be very careful when you're selling, because, you know, these shenanigans are only going to be working against those that are selling if they allow these fools to take carriage of the most valuable asset, and one that could cost them not only tens of thousands but hundreds of thousands of dollars because of the bullshit campaigns that these agents want to run. And we'll close it off with that, for no better interest than themselves, because it's a shorter time on market, guaranteed sale, the pressure's on. And so you see, we only got 1.35, because that's the market, that's what it's dictating, you know, whatever. Anyway, so that's that, Martin. So I'll keep our viewers more up to date with different things. And I will be asking more and more in my interviews, asking more permission to record. Most say no. They don't mind me taking notes, but definitely not no recording. But those that, if I, in the future we get that, some more that say yes, within the conversation, after a little while they forget that they're on camera and they'll spill the beans.
Well, keep up the good work, Edwin. I think it's a really, really important subject. And, many people still don't believe, right, that what we're showing is something that's really critically important to understand, particularly now. And I think your point is dead right, because the listings, and it's worth just sort of looking quickly at the listings, right? So this is the Sydney listings on the 14th with 15,963, and then the 21st, it was 16,156. So a small rise. This is again the Sydney region, but not a big rise, right? And not really yet showing anything other than the continuation of that trend where the listings are, you know, rising a little bit earlier than sometimes, but still it's a relatively small rise, isn't it?
Look, it is. And there's chatter in the network, in the industry network, that we get our information from across Sydney. There are a lot of suburbs. Within the next week or 2 weeks, we will see double. I mean, well, when I say double, I mean, when you're running four or five listings at the moment, double is not a lot. But some will see double, if not triple, the amount of properties on the market for sale. Quite a number of parts of the Blacktown LGA are going to experience a big jump in numbers. Some of the suburbs in the Blacktown LGA. Likewise, we're hearing the same in of all places, the Epping region. There's a lot of people now have decided, and mainly in the Epping region, mainly are the retirees and people that just. They're moving on from the suburb. They've grown up in the suburb, and they feel it's the price is right and the time is right for them to move on and seek do a sea change, do a tree change, whatever they're going to do. They're basically moving on because the prices have increased dramatically, and they continue to go up north. So they feel it's time. Now's the right time to make those moves. So there'll be a lot of parts in Sydney over the next week or two where we'll see, like I said, double, and in some suburbs triple the amount of listings on market due to the spring sales that people have been holding on to. A lot of the cases. And a lot of the agents that we've spoken to, the majority of them, it's not that they're in any dire situation to sell, but it's the delays have been around more from the side of trades work in small renovation works that have taken longer than what they've expected. But they've rated out throughout winter. And spring is generally, we see the uplifting numbers anyway. So fingers crossed for many people that want to move into the buy in the market, because more numbers means a bit more competition.
Right, I'm talking more competition. This is the Melbourne data from the 7th of August with 22,864. If we look at the next data point on the 21st of August, 23,282. So there's a little bit of an increase, but again, nothing like the significant hike that some people were thinking in terms of listings yet. So early days.
Yeah, look, it is. And let's not forget, we're still a couple of weeks away from the official start of spring, right?
Mm.
And then things get really cranking until the middle of spring. That's what happened last year as well. But look, there's a few more properties on market by way of auction. The warmer, the sunny weekends that we've been experiencing has put an extra, I think, 50 more or so than what we had last week. But it's up there. There's a little bit of trend, but for me, it's these data points, these numbers are only reflective of the. For the most part, the seasonal change, your historical seasonal changing numbers anyway, because people feel more comfortable. The traditional seller will, as we said, would retreat through winter, and they'll come out in spring. So good luck to all those that have waited, and let's see how these numbers continue to grow, but the ones that continue to, I've seen a continual trend downwards, Martin, and it's becoming scarier by the week, because it's been consistently about 250, 270 homes on market less, or properties on is the rental arena, I'm going to say that by the end of spring, because there's a lot of movement in spring as well for renters, I'd say we're going to be looking in your low nines, Martin. Very anytime soon. It's scary because there's not a lot of choice, and a lot of apartments are getting taken out as well in terms of being rented out fairly quickly. So it's that side. Is very, very ominous or scary in my view for those that are looking rental accommodation.
I agree. The rental story is pretty painful. And interestingly, even out in regional areas, there's still significant pressure on the rental market. I was talking to someone the other day who's trying to find somewhere to rent in one of these regional areas. And even there, the supply is going down and down, and the, you know, the prices are still rising. So there's going to be probably more pressure on rents going higher, and that could feed into inflation as well. So the rental story is pretty disastrous, whether you're looking in central areas or whether looking out into the regions, unfortunately. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, your tip of the week.
My tip of the week is I saw privileged to see a before you bid building inspector do an inspection on a home that's going to go to market. I just happened to be there, and scary shit, man. Scary shit. So if you're going to be offered a before to bid inspection report from the selling agent, say no thank you. Get your own. I mean, this guy was in and out within 22 minutes. Mm. 22 minutes flat. And I sort of, you know, followed him around. Saw what he did, but more to the point, I saw what he didn't do. And it is scary. So if you're going to be bidding at an auction anytime soon, throw it in, and you get offered it before you bid. But we've said this before, right? We've been talking about this for years. Again, it's just one of those things that, being in the right place at the right time for me, it was rather interesting to see how shit doesn't get done. I can't say how shit gets done. It's more to the point how it doesn't get done. And it's scary, and it's allowed to happen once again.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, as we've said before, these reports that are provided by the vendor as part of the marketing program is all you need to know. It's part of the marketing program. It's not necessarily anything to do with real information. And quite often, sorry, the dogs are making a bit of a noise. So the fact is that a lot of the information that you need to find won't be in those reports. So you have to get your own report. And if they claim that they can do a full and appropriate inspection in 20 minutes, then you know and I know that that's not going to happen, right? Because in my days of building surveying, a full structural survey on a property would take between half a day and a day, depending on the property, right? And that would include going into all the void spaces, going under the property where you could, and really looking in all the nooks and crannies. If what you were doing was doing just a simple top-level valuation appraisal, all you were doing was to make sure that it basically had four walls, windows and doors, and that was about it. And that was the one that the banks went with. But if you're going to buy the property, you need a proper detailed piece of analysis that you can rely on, not the marketing spiel that's provided by the agent as part of the marketing program.
100%. And that's it. That's been our motto from when we started doing our podcast. So I just want to say, what we're providing is trying to get educational information across. We're not encouraging people trying to push people to buy. We're not trying to push people not to buy. We're just trying to give information from different avenues. And people can make their own decisions, unless I am contracted. Then it's a different. I will give you property advice, and I will do a lot more. But I hope that what we're sharing, what we're giving is more general information as to. What at the end of the day, we also use. I use, my team uses. To make certain decisions or to look at the different trends for our different clients, but there's more detailed versions of what we're sharing on social media platforms and the like, because obviously we have a contractual obligation to clients, and we do carry a license. So we've got to be very, very, very careful what we say and how we do things as well, how we approach things. A lot of what we do and a lot of what we share, I just hope that people accept it for what it is. And if you want to take me to task on Twitter or where I put my post, let's take me to task. Question what I say. That's the main platform that I put things on. If you want to have a conversation, albeit a conversation without without slurs or any of that nature, I'm all for it. I'm all for it, and that's what I believe, and I hope that we continue to put forth in on our Monday rants, Martin. And I hope that's the case. And when I stop doing that, I hope that you're the first one that to cut the podcast off.
Absolutely. Well, I always say, remind everybody, there's a thing called caveat emptor, right? Which is let the buyer beware. And I think in the current environment, more than ever, buyers do need to be aware, as do sellers, by the way, as well, because there's a lot of stuff going on below the waterline. And to the extent that Edwin, you and I are able to share some of our insights to help people and navigate some of these critical decisions that people take, then this rant will continue to run at the point where we stop being objective, independent, and also, frankly, a little bit needly with regard to the industry. I'd start to worry, because I know that there are many people who are actually taken to the cleaners on the way through that shouldn't be. So caveat emptor, Edwin, caveat emptor.
Yes, caveat emptor. And on that note, Martin, look after yourself, stay warm, stay healthy, and until next Monday.
Look forward to it, Edwin, and have a good week. See you later. Bye-bye.
The best.